It's time!
Happy number one medal! The eagle rises again! 29-0.
That's it! He's got the chance!
Nate Diaz!
He's out!
He has done it! It is all over! Nate Diaz beats Conor McGregor!
What a night, ladies and gentlemen! What a night!
Rose Lava, you're trying to close the show!
She was doing a great job of face.
That is it!
You're listening to Pound for Pound, ringside for all things MMA and boxing on WFUV Sports.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Pound for Pound, your weekly podcast covering everything combat sports here at WFUV. I'm your host, Andrew Canary, and I'm here with Mati Dembele and Riley Lucas. We had some exciting fights with UFC on ABC5 going down in Jacksonville, Florida just yesterday. So we have a lot to talk about from the fights and also some announcements and controversies to get into later on. But before that, how are you guys doing?
I'll let you take the reins first, Mati.
Well, we didn't get to talk about this last week, but I told you so. I told you guys, Dubronx, he put the division on notice. I mean, my streak is going up. I'm doing pretty good, so I'm pretty
I know, happy. And mine's going down. So I'm hoping that there could be a turnaround in these next couple weeks. Thankfully, we're just doing a fight recap today kind of ordeal. But just know, Mati, when 290 and 291 come around, I'm taking the reins back.
Oh, my God. I gotta make sure I'm on point then.
Yeah, you guys are going to be doing prep work for weeks. But yeah, luckily, no stakes will be put on the line, I guess, for this episode. It's only going to be recaps of the fights yesterday. But yeah, very, very interesting fights. UFC back on ABC. And whenever they go on ABC, it's always a big card. And with that, the headlining fight was Ilia Topuria taking on Josh Emmett in a top featherweight contender fight. It was a fantastic fight. Ilia Topuria put on a boxing masterclass. But before that, I do want to get in a couple other fights in the main card, namely David Onama defeating Gabriel Santos via KO TKO in the second round. I'm officially a David Onama fan. I don't know about you guys now, but this guy has gone out every single time and has had an exciting fight in the UFC. He's either finished all of his opponents, which he has done so far in his all three wins, he's finished all three opponents, or in his one loss, it was against Nate Landwehr, and it was one of the most exciting fights of the year. So I am a huge, huge fan of David Onama. I cannot see where he goes next, but I just want to get your guys' reaction from this fight and this huge finish.
I'm going to take this immediately. Like, to both gentlemen, a wonderful fight. However, like, David Onama, he deserves his flowers. I mean, this is the entertainment business. You earn your dollars by talking a massive amount of garbage and stuff, but it's those quiet guys that sneak up on you. He's called the Silent Assassin for a reason. I mean, 11-2 MMA record. He's a 7-0 in his TKO count, a 4-0 submission record. I mean, that Nate fight that he had, it was absolutely fireworks. You see them both pumping up the crowd. You see Nate walking away from him, amping up the crowd, and they're just knocking each other out. And he dismantled Gabriel Benitez. I believe it was at fight night. Vicious KO. He had an 8-fight win streak prior to the Mason Jones fight, which was his only other loss. He's an MMA artist in every sense of the word. Sneaky good power, especially in his right hand. And going back to that Santos fight, he had 59 total strikes. 56 of those were significant strikes. There are some issues with his takedown defense. But otherwise, he could be a future contender in the bantamweight and featherweight divisions. I believe he's anchoring between the two, but he's someone to look out for, genuinely, and he's awesome. I'm also a fan, Andrew. I'm with you on that boat.
I mean, I was a little shocked from the start that he was the underdog, too. He was, I think, like plus 200. And his reach, he's got like 5 inches on him. So the fact that, you know, alone that he was viewed as an underdog is a little crazy to me. But good for him. They don't call him the Silent Assassin for no reason. Like, it's very inevitable he is. And honestly, coming from this, I would like to see him definitely jump up the ladder and fight someone. Like, I feel like Charles Jourdain would be fun just because we just watched him get that captivating win over Cron Gracie. So I think there's a lot of energy and momentum behind the two. I think that would have him jump up the ladder a little bit, maybe too much, but I still think it would be fun to watch for sure.
Yeah, that would definitely be a fun matchup, especially for a guy like Jourdain. I feel like he definitely didn't want to fight that fight against Cron Gracie and took him a lot of, game plan and working in weird areas. This is something that is definitely right up his alley. Mm-hmm. Just a bang out fight going all three rounds. But honestly, what I might be interested in seeing is maybe a rematch against Nate Landwehr, especially since Nate is coming off a loss against Dan Ige just a couple weeks ago.
Yeah.
That was his bid to like really get up in the top 15.
I think they're back to back too in rank. Sorry to cut you off. I think they're like 29 and 30. Let me check. Yeah. Charles Jourdain is 29 right now for the featherweights, and then Nate is 30.
Nate is 30. Okay.
And that would be a big thing for David to jump up to that level as well and just start climbing the ladder. And entertainment purposes alone, I think those two are just exciting. All three of those people we've mentioned. So absolutely. I wouldn't mind watching either of those matchups.
No, that'd be very, very exciting. And also, I mean, Onama getting that win against Nate Landwehr, if that fight does get scheduled, that's huge for his record, you know, kind of scratching that one loss off his record. Mm-hmm. So, I think the sky's the limit for David Onama. And this huge finish, I feel like, really puts the whole division on notice. But moving on, though, I do want to go to the co-main event, which was a women's matchup between Macy Barber and Amanda Ribas. This was a crazy fight. It kind of reminded me of Wei Li Zhang versus Joanna Jędrzejczyk, that first fight years ago. Crazy, crazy fight. I would say it's probably my women's fight of the year for 2023 so far. Macy Barber obviously defeating Amanda Ribas via KO, TKO in the second round. And honestly, this is something that I think that Macy Barber really, really needed. I'm not a huge fan of her. I felt like she had a huge start or a really hot start in the UFC. And then once she got up against some adversity like Roxanne Modafferi and a couple other people, she had some injuries too. It really kind of stunted her growth. And because of that, she wasn't too exciting in my eyes. But this is the fight that I really saw her come back and, you know, like how she started in the UFC. So I wonder what's your guys' opinions on this one?
I mean, first of all, I love the reference, you know, Joanna Jędrzejczyk with that huge, like that.
Yeah, the hematoma.
Oh, my hematoma on the, that was an amazing fight. But this fight, in every sense of the word, it was fireworks, right? Post-fight, Barbara proclaimed that her and Ribas had to fight at night, and I agree. It was a great fight by number 11, and she beat somebody who was in the top 10. And shout out to Ribas. She came out loose. I don't know if you guys saw, but she looked loose. She looked good early on. She's a better grappler coming from a judo background. She also connected on some shots of her own. But I got to tell you, Macy Barber, she's the future. I mean, with everything she's been through, she's strung together a few impressive streaks. She's 6 wins by KO, 2 by submission. She's a 13-2 overall record. And she's a striker. She's a headhunter specifically. Her significant strike by target is 64% times to the head. And you guys saw that when she gave Ribas that big left kick followed by that phantom left punch. It was just beautiful. So I'm really high on her. She's only 25 years old. And she's lit. She has like a long like UFC life with injuries and all the stuff she's been through. So she's maturing the game. And I'm really high on this girl. Really,
I mean, really I couldn't agree more, honestly. But here's my question. Why, you know, she's another underdog win right here. Mm-hmm. Where were all these underdog wins when 2 weeks ago I said I'm only pulling for underdogs and none of them came out on top?
Welcome to my world.
I went for every underdog. And now this week, it's like all these underdogs are just popping out. And I mean, Monty, I couldn't agree more with what you said. I think she clearly is the feature living up to her name. But God, what the? Like,
I don't know, Riley. I don't know.
On my side.
Like, I think whatever I had, I infected you with. And
I know. I don't like this at all.
You guys are getting real lucky as of late. But I'm thinking of maybe possible matchups in the future for Macy Barber, because as you say, her nickname, the future, I could finally see the future for her. But what is these future matchups? I'm really interested. I have a few picked out. And the main one that I'm kind of leaning towards now is her possibly fighting Jessica Andrade. Out of this, okay. I feel like that'd be a great matchup. I know Jessica Andrade is currently slated to fight Tatiana Suarez in her comeback fight. Personally, I think Andrade is really going to lose that fight. I think Tatiana Suarez is a beast. But coming off that fight, I would really want to see Macy Barber go up against somebody that has great power and great grappling, such as Andrade. What do you guys think about that?
I also believe that matchup works because, again, just like we talked about Onama, she's also weak on the ground. I believe her takedown defense is only at a 47%, and her takedown accuracy is about 37%. So maybe stylistically that fight's worked. Because before this, I didn't know where she would go. I believe she's still ranked at 11. I don't think she moved up as of today. I have to check the rankings again. But that fight absolutely works for me, and I would love to see that.
Yeah.
I mean, it all sounds good to me. I think another one exciting would be the winner of that fight you just said.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, definitely. And I think at the bottom line, though, no matter who she fights, I think she needs another big performance like this, because this really changed my viewpoint on her. And it kind of got me more into the realm of, I guess, being a fan of her. So I think
it didn't really do that much for me. I'm not going to lie.
Really?
I mean, it was exciting, but I still need to see more, I think.
I mean, Andrew, I know you guys say you're not high on her, but if you look at her resume, like, you're going to see all W's. And one of the two losses that she had was to Alexa Grasso, who's currently the reigning defending.
Yeah.
And somebody I was personally high on. I believe even last week I picked her. I said, obviously, Amanda Nunes is going to win. But if Alexa Grasso wins, don't be surprised. That's the biggest loss of her career. And of course, that's Alexa Grasso. But if you look around it, it's a bunch of wins. I'm very high on Macy Barber. I like her, 25 years old again. And she's currently on a five fight win streak with two unanimous decisions and a TKO victory. The other two were split decisions, but she's great. She's here, and I'm personally high on her. I like this girl a lot.
Yeah, and I do like that you highlight that she is only 25. I mean, pretty much when you think about it, she's just starting in the UFC despite having so many fights already, you know, on her resume. So yeah, I think the future is definitely now, and we'll see how she develops. But moving on to the main event, this was a banger of a fight. Ilia Topuria defeating Josh Emmett via unanimous decision. These scorecards were pretty hard to look at if you're Josh Emmett. 50-42, 49-45. And the best way that I would describe this fight was a boxing masterclass by Topuria, always sticking out the jab, always ready to take a back step and counter with that big right hand. And it just seemed like Josh Emmett was on the back foot throughout this entire fight. He got dropped a couple times. And while he did show a lot of heart, I really do want to say that I felt like he really did, despite being technically outmatched, he really did show a good performance. Ilia Topuria just mopped the floor with him. It was crazy.
Yeah, and I mean, as a Josh Emmett fan, it's just a hard watch. It's hard watch, hard read, hard all of the above. It's something you don't want to see. So
definitely a fall
from grace. Comment on this one. No kidding.
What I got to tell you is, like, for as a boxing guy, like, it comes full circle. Like, his nickname is El Matador, and I remember, like, Lomachenko in the past fight just doing this, and the guy can't touch him. It was a boxing masterclass, and sometimes it's not just because we highlighted here, because Josh Emmett is 38 years of age, I believe. It's not just who you beat, and I keep saying this because it's an old boxing adage. It's not who you beat, but it's how you beat them, right? At the height of his powers, I think Jorge Masvidal, right? Ben Askren, but it's like the quickest KO of all time. Like, it's stuff like that. I mean, Topuria, he's 14-0. He's undefeated. 4 wins by knockout, 8 by submission, 9 first round finishes. Like, this guy is... He's otherworldly as a boxer. Like, I don't know. His striking accuracy is 50%. His takedown defense is almost, like, 93%, I believe, is what it is. This guy, I want to see, me personally, I don't know. I would like to see another, maybe, let's say, because I believe Josh Emmett was 5, if I'm not mistaken. If I could see him against, like, an Arnold Allen, maybe another guy in the top 5. Maybe.
That's actually what I was going to say later, Madi. I think Arnold Allen could be a great matchup for him, or even maybe a Max Holloway after Max Holloway's done fighting a great time. I'm a huge Max Holloway fan. I'm a little scared.
I know.
That's what I'm saying. Don't do that to me. I want Bless to, like, Arnold Allen for now. Let's stay there.
Because, I mean, when I think about it.
I would love to watch Max Holloway, truly.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, that'd be a fantastic fight. But when I'm thinking about it, the reason I'm so worried is that, I mean, Topuria, over his past 3 fights alone, has built up such a resume of being such a scary dude at featherweight. I mean, you look at his fight against Bryce Mitchell, where he's literally, like, ragdolling him around the cage, and Bryce Mitchell's built up to be somebody that's a crazy grappling threat. Mm-hmm. And now somebody against Josh Emmett, who has huge knockout power, and Ilia Topuria is just able to beat the brakes off.
Yeah, it's just another disappointing week for me after I made all those controversial statements on BJJ guys. Now all of a sudden he's going to come and give this dude a beat down. Thank goodness we didn't have fight.
It's the Dennis curse.
Yeah, thank goodness. So I'm hoping, you know, we do see a future Max Holloway fight, since he typically goes for, you know, as a striker. I would love to see him win that and just give me something, please. I talked all this smack about these BJJ guys, and all of a sudden they're really rising to the top, so... I can't catch a break this summer.
I know, yeah. The tables have been officially turned, I guess. But, I mean, At the bottom line, though, do you guys think that if he does make it to a title shot, do you think that he really does pose some serious threats for Volkanovski? Because in my personal opinion, I think that could legitimately be one of his toughest tests.
I think it'll be a tough test, but I think it still poses challenge for sure. I still think it could be possible. With what we've seen so far, I think it'd be ignorant to say it's not. He's just proven himself.
It is possible. Anything's fun. This is the fight business, right? All it takes is a punch.
We've learned the hard way a lot of times.
Yes, we have. The fact that all it takes is a punch. But guys like Alexander Volkanovski, I think as of right now, he's ranked number 2 in the world, like pound for pound, right behind Islam, in a fight where other people were like, he probably won that. Volkanovski is a different conversation for a different day, I would say. Again, Arnold Allen, I think, is next. I think another guy in the top 5 is where he should be looking. And then from there, I think we'll cross that bridge when we get there. Volkanovski is, that's tough. That's a very tough, that's no easy task. But I'm very high on Topuria. He's fantastic. Had himself a ball. And the sky's the limit, truly is.
Yeah, no, I think the sky is truly a limit. And I'm really excited to see where it goes from here. Because after this fight, no matter who he gets scheduled against next time, it's going to be an amazing fight. And it's going to have some really high stakes coming out of it. But one thing I do want to touch on, though, before we wrap up this whole UFC on ABC card is, where does Josh Emmett go from here? Because, I mean, he's lost two in the past, you know, in 2023. I don't think he's gotten a win yet, despite, you know, I mean, those are some really high stakes fights, one for the interim belt and obviously one against Topuria. He is 38, so I keep going back and forth. I was thinking about this last night, if he's going to continue to be a threat at featherweight or if he's just going to start to fade out. I'm not sure. What are your guys' opinions?
Well, what
he's still in the top 10, though. Sorry to jump in there first. I don't think obviously it is disappointing to see, but he still hasn't fallen off completely. So I still think there's a way he could turn this around. I feel like there's a lot of people in the top 10 that he could still fight and just prove us wrong. Just hoping this isn't a long-term way of him slipping away, like you mentioned.
What I will say is, if his name was Conor, Ronda, or Brock, he would have been fighting for a title. But Josh Emmett, he has good power. And a guy like that, I don't think he just goes away. And you see with the older guys, you see Jorge Masvidal stepping out, Clint Guida, who's like a million fights in, he's still around. But I believe he's ranked 5, if I'm not mistaken. Is it 5? It's something pretty
high. Ranked number 4 or 5, I believe.
Ranked number 4 or 5. You see that? And I believe he's right under Arnold Allen. I think he's going to stick around. I think when you have that knockout power, you always have a puncher's chance. And yeah, I think he has a couple wins in his future, potentially. I don't think this is it for him.
Gotcha. Yeah. And now I'm starting to think, too, that, you know, like, I guess you always love old boxing wisdom, Mahdi. And the last thing that always goes, people say, is the person's power. You know, like we look at George Foreman. I mean, still 45 years old, still has knockout power. He might not have the reaction or the speed, but he still has that knockout power. So, yeah, I think Josh Emmett could definitely still be a threat. But, yeah, no, amazing UFC on ABC card. Some really exciting fights. But yeah, I do want to move into a bit of news here. Conor McGregor, we did take a bit of an off week last week, so we weren't really able to talk about all the craziness that was coming out. McGregor has gotten into definitely some hot water, especially surrounding the NBA and all of that stuff. And also on top of that, he's having some troubles actually trying to get a fight scheduled in 2023. So I guess the first thing that we're going to tackle here, which I kind of mentioned, was he made an appearance at the Heat game during the NBA Finals against the Nuggets. I believe it was on June 9th. The Nuggets ended up winning that night, 108-95. But during that same night, Conor McGregor has been accused of sexually assaulting a woman in the bathroom at the stadium. And she also, the accuser also alleges that the Heat tried to cover it up, essentially, by separating her friend from, you know, her and leading her to Conor McGregor. There's a whole bunch of stuff going on here, and all the specifications aren't really, really clear yet because they're still investigating the situation. But this is definitely not the first time that we've seen Conor McGregor get into hot water before over this type of thing. So what is your guys' first take on this?
Here's my thing. When is Conor McGregor not in some form of trouble? It's, you know, at first I feel like we could all just laugh. I remember back when he was like throwing a slap at Machine Gun Kelly and just like stupid little things. But now it's gotten to a point where we hear more about Conor McGregor's drama outside of, you know, the ring, as opposed to what goes on in the octagon. And I think that's the problem. I don't really know much. I haven't looked too deep into this alleged sexual assault or rape or whatever. I don't know the details, but what I do know is there's always seems to be a problem with Conor McGregor. So maybe instead of even looking for a fight, he should be looking to behave.
You know, a wise man once said, and he said it to Michael Chandler, you got this handed to you. You got that Dana White privilege. And, you know, going back to his early days, Conor McGregor, it was like, usually, you know, his fight with Dennis Siver, he gets the shot, blah, 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 blah. And then he just runs around and he does practically whatever he wants. I believe up to this point, he has one win since Obama was in office. I was 13 at the time. I'm 20 in 3 months. This guy sucks. I've always thought he was overrated, but he's, when you're the biggest draw the sport has ever seen, even a bigger draw than like the GOAT John Jones or guys like BJ Penn and Chuck Liddell who built the business up.
He's the personality.
He's the personality. Of course, you could do whatever you want. You could throw dollies at buses full of fighters. You could be in your second sexual assault allegation and it will probably go away. You could punch old men in bars. You could wear pink suits and punch Machine Gun Kelly in the face. It's Conor McGregor.
It is really frustrating though when people do like, they're like, oh, Conor McGregor is the greatest of all time. No, he's not. I'm a Conor McGregor hater aside from all this, but I think, like you said, you made a great point with that analogy. 2013 was it? That's been a long time.
2016. I was 13.
Okay, you were 13, so not as bad, but still, that was still a very long time ago, and that's something we really need to take into consideration, because a lot of people just consider him like the face of, you know, the UFC or the GOAT. And it's really just because of his personality. And I honestly think that these controversies in a way help him because they keep him in the news. And that's why we talk about Conor McGregor. We don't talk about him for fighting as much anymore. We just talk about him because of these scandals. So in a sense, in some horribly twisted way, it is helping him, but for all the wrong reasons.
Yeah, I think that you do highlight a really good point there, Riley, is that the only reason that we're talking about him is that he's in hot water once again, and he's doing something as, you know, I guess still kind of unofficially the face of our sport. He's still kind of, you know, getting into these situations that we don't want him to see, but also I guess it is keeping him in that cultural zeitgeist. We're still talking about him. Mm-hmm. But I will say, though, if he does get found out to, you know, that these accusations are actually true and he actually did this, I don't know if he'll ever fight in the UFC ever again. Or, I mean, to what end will this end? I mean, I could possibly see him being, you know.
It's hard, though, because he does have that Dana White privilege. I think if anything, maybe if it is real, which I don't know if it is. I think also, like, we jump to assume maybe it's real just because he has so much problems. But it might not be real, and this might all blow over soon. But even if it is, I think with time, he'll still definitely come back.
Yeah,
it'll ever be over for Conor
McGregor. What I tell you is I definitely see Conor McGregor fighting for like a title soon. Like, it's going to be the same thing. Like, he was a two division champ when he didn't have his belt when he fought Khabib, but you see him at the press conference with two belts even though he got stripped. Like, he genuinely, like, I've never seen this before across any sport. And there's bigger guys in other sports. LeBron James, perhaps Patrick Mahomes is taking the NFL by storm. This is a guy that legitimately does what he wants, and it, to no effect. And he's probably going to be fighting for a title again. You'll see him headlining a pay-per-view. That's Conor.
Yeah, we'll definitely see. And we'll definitely keep you guys out there updated on the situation as it develops, especially given how serious it is. I definitely am very interested to see if it has any weight to it. But you guys keep talking about if he's going to fight, will he get a title fight, when is he going to come back? And our second headline is actually talking about that. I mentioned a little bit earlier is that Conor McGregor has now officially missed the deadline to enter the USADA pool to actually fight Michael Chandler in 2023. So now if he actually does want to fight Michael Chandler or literally anybody else, he's going to have to wait till 2024 at the earliest.
Which I think was done purposely in terms of because of this open case or open situation, obviously. And I just think it's probably for the best. Mm-hmm. I think it was a good PR move, I would say. Just take a step back and, you know, take it slow and behind the scenes for now. It's unfortunate.
Yeah, no, it's definitely unfortunate to see, especially with The Ultimate Fighter Season 31 actively airing right now. It seems like, you know, it was supposed to be the return of McGregor, like he was supposed to fight, you know, at the end of the summer. And as soon as he's starting to get back, you know, in the cultural eye or mainstream eye, he gets in all this hot water and all this trouble. But yeah, I actually didn't really think of it in that way, that he's trying to, you know, he didn't enter the USADA pool to kind of just dodge a bullet and let, you know, kind of the flames die down. I think that's a really good point, Riley. There's been a ton of doping allegations thrown around too. I mean, we've all seen the photos of Conor McGregor looking the way that he looks. Yeah. I see Maddie's camera.
Right. Like we hear about him way too much for all the wrong reasons. Like,
I know. So what I'm also thinking now too is that maybe he intentionally didn't join the USADA pool to give himself extra time to come off whatever he's coming off.
100%.
100%. If he takes a piss test, the cup will burn. Like, he's like on every single thing like possible.
Yeah. So I mean, it will definitely be interesting to see how that develops, especially since Michael Chandler has been so vocal about trying to fight Conor McGregor for what seems to be like 3 years on end at this point. It feels like he's getting so close now, but he's still so far. But with that being said, though, we actually do have some news for that McGregor versus Chandler season. And that is the Tough season 31, which is that season. The finales will take place at UFC 292 in Boston, which is that Aljamain Sterling versus Sean O'Malley card. That's going to be awesome. I imagine that will probably take place on the early main card, if not maybe the featured prelim. But I'm really, really excited to see how that pans out. And I think that just adds extra weight to UFC 292, which is already a fantastic card.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, definitely. And I think, also we got, on top of Sterling, we got Chris Weidman's return too. So I think it will definitely be a nice card to watch, especially since I think this is the first time coming back to Boston, like maybe 3-4 years, something like that.
Yeah.
It's definitely been a while. So it'll definitely be cool to see. But some other news, we officially, yeah, Madi, you.
Wanted to point out another great fight that I think we should look out for. I mean, Riley, your guy Rob Font on this card, and he fights Song Yadong. I mean, these were two guys that I believe in our predictions that we both picked to win. I was right in one of them, you were right in the other one. But that's also a great fight. Like, Cody Garbrandt is on this card as well.
It's going to be a big one for the two of us.
Yes, of course. A guy like Chris Weidman, New York's very own.
Oh, Song Yadong. Don't do me dirty again, please.
Your scars on this card. Like, this is a very, I'm looking it up now. Like,
it's very exciting.
Wow.
All the fights to come in the future, I'm very happy with them.
Yes, yes.
I mean, always have weeks that are a little slower than others, but really the rest of the summer, we got a jam-packed summer, and I'm just excited. I feel like through next October, is that when that fight in the Middle East is?
Yeah, I believe so.
Yeah, like we have a lot to talk about. It's going to be a jam-packed pound-for-pound next couple of months, that's for damn sure.
Yeah, Andrew, your boy Aljamain's headlining, like 292, I know.
It's going to be amazing. I cannot wait. It's going to be so fun. And hopefully, who knows, maybe we'll be able to get credentials and actually cover it in person. Maybe. Fingers crossed. We'll see what happens.
Don't blame me with a good song.
But some other news, though. Definitely big news for definitely all our Mexican fans out there. Alexa Grasso versus Valentina Shevchenko 2 is now officially scheduled for September 16th. That is Mexican Independence Day. And that is taking place at T-Mobile Arena in Las Vegas. I'm very, very excited for this fight.
I'm not.
You're not excited? Wait.
Well, right, I'm not because I want Valentina to win. I'm pulling for Shevchenko. But like when it's on Mexican Independence Day, it's, you know it's going to have a lot of energy hyping her up in that arena.
Yeah.
So
everything's going to be working against her. Honestly, though, I guess we're going to get into, a little bit of early predictions here. Shevchenko, I really do think, can win this fight. I think that, honestly, I favor her to win this fight. But given all the intangibles, the Mexican Independence Day, everything that happened last fight, I mean, it's going to be a tough fight.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I really was pulling for Shevchenko, but with all this added stuff, it's going to be, I don't want to say it's going to be a problem, but it's definitely going to be some added stuff in there to combat for her. But I think if she does win, which I'm hoping she will, it'll be even more of a satisfying win that she did it with all of the energy that's going to be behind Alex Grasso.
Really? I think I may pull for Grasso. There's something about that crowd.
I love our rivalry.
Yeah, this.
Thankfully, we have time for that one.
Yes.
You guys got time to prepare. You guys got time.
But we'll definitely be duking it out in September then, I assume.
We will see. We'll see. And
no, definitely. But to, I guess, just wrap up the new segment, we got something a little bit lighthearted. I know we were talking about McGregor and the Ultimate Fighter and a bunch of other, you know, kind of, I guess, a little bit harder hitting issues. But I do want to talk about this one. It is pretty funny. Floyd Mayweather's 2-year-old grandson has been shown shadow boxing in a video, as well as doing a couple other boxing exercises. I thought it was hilarious. What did you guys think?
I thought it was not only hilarious, but I'm terrified of that baby, because I think one thing that we're forgetting is not only is that the grandson of Floyd Mayweather, that is the son of NBA Youngboy. So that kid has not only, you know, natural boxing capabilities in his genes and skills, he has NBA Youngboy's genes. And if we know anything about NBA Youngboy, that is a scary dude. So
that is a very scary thing.
So I
like Javonte Davis and Floyd Mayweather.
That's what I'm saying. Like, this kid, I'm already like, if I walked in a room right now and this kid was in there, I think I'd run at age 2. I'm already trying to avoid this kid. I can only imagine, what's his name? I think it's Kentrell Jr., right? I'm gonna be like 40 years old and I'm gonna be hearing about him like taking over the boxing world. I'm gonna say, I knew this was coming. I think the world knows it was coming, honestly. There was a video too previously, I think it was like a year ago, when he was like very little, he was like a year old, and he was just punching a door with his gloves on. Did you guys see that?
I did see that.
Yeah. Going out of door. And that was when I already was like, all right, this kid's a monster. I fear this child. So
he got an impression.
Yeah, we were talking about it in our group chat last night, and Madi said, got to start him young. And I thought that was the funniest thing ever. But I mean,
especially nowadays with all the competition. I mean, we see that in all sports. We see even, you know, I always make comparisons to the NBA because I love talking basketball too, but there's so many guys in the NBA who started playing when they were babies. I mean, their parents had like a little kiddie hoop and had them going to town on it every night. So, I mean, now we also see all that, like, what's that dude, Baby Gronk? like these kids are leveling up on us. So, I mean, I don't blame him for starting him young. He's got some competition out there, I'm sure.
No, definitely. And it'll be interesting to see, I guess, as he gets older and as he develops. I don't know. Maybe we have a very young superstar in our hands. Who knows?
My name is Madi Dembele. I'm the number one ranked fourth grader in the nation. I've offered to LSU, Iowa.
That's how it feels nowadays, I'm telling you.
Yeah, I guess so. We'll have to keep his eye on it. But I think that'll do it for this installment of Pound for Pound. Make sure to tune into our episode next week, where we'll break down our picks for Sean Strickland versus Abus Magomedov and prepare for UFC 290 during International Fight Week, which is just around the corner. I'm very excited. Before I go, I want to give a massive thanks to my co-hosts Riley and Madi, as well as our producer Brendan Shorey. My name is Andrew Canary, and Pound for Pound is a production of WFUV Sports. We'll